and courses of study leading to your certified AA through PhD, all online. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these 3 stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. Let me remind you that telephone number is 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917. Pick up your telephone and dial, ask your question, join in the dialogue and discussion. We're talking about 2 or 3 different things, but maybe the major issue that we're going to touch on are anchor babies, American citizens. Our anchor babies, American citizens. We've just gotten through talking about DOGE, the Department of, Government Excellence. It is a department that was set up by executive order from Donald J. Trump, and Elon Musk is heading it up. Elon Musk, as our latest caller said, has total clearance to go into the buildings, et cetera. But he's been accused of robbing America. Stealing Social Security checks, going in to dismantle our nation, that it is a shadow government. All kinds of excuses are being given. And the thing that we need to ask the question and be concerned about, why should the socialist, Marxist, communist, Democrats be so upset if there's nothing wrong, if there's no theft, if there's no waste, fraud, or abuse? Why should they be upset for opening the door to be able to look in and see what's there? If you go to get an automobile, you look under the hood, or at least you should look under the hood, see if there's an engine there. So you got Elon Musk going in, open the door to see what's there. Who's writing the checks? Where are they going? How is it being processed? But there's all kinds of hoopla in America today. We must realize exactly why would the Democrats get into kill mode, K-I-L-L, kill mode over saving tax money that the American taxpayers are paying. Could it be that they, the Democratic Party, are guilty of fraud? Ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize what is taking place. And linked with that altogether is the fact that they're pushing, they, the Democrats, are pushing against President Donald J. Trump's position that because a pregnant woman comes into America, crosses the border illegally, gives birth to a child, that child is to be considered automatically as an American citizen. That's been happening for years. That continues to take place. And the question is that correct? Is that right? Is that something that should be viewed as valid? The question is, ladies and gentlemen, are anchor babies citizens? We need to understand the 14th Amendment. We can't understand, ladies and gentlemen, and answer that question if they're legally considered American citizens, or if it's a misunderstanding, misadjudication, a misapplication of the 14th Amendment of the United States of America. What does it mean? I'm looking at a headline, Birthright Citizenship, a Fundamental Misunderstanding of the 14th Amendment. This article opens with this. Critics claim that anyone born in the United States is automatically a U.S. citizen, even if their parents are here illegally. Its original meaning refers to the political allegiance of an individual and the jurisdiction that the foreign government has over that individual. We want to talk about that in depth. We have on the line with us Greg Youngblood, one of our four sons. Greg resides up in the southern tip of heaven, that place called Greenville, Tennessee. Greg, thank you for taking time out of a busy schedule to join us today.
It's a pleasure. Tell you what, this subject of the 14th Amendment, because as it's discussed, you know, folks need to realize context, and we've discussed this before. 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, they go together. Those are all slave amendments. Those are dealing with freeing the slaves. 13th, 14th, giving equal protection to those former slaves and offspring thereof, and 15th Amendment, giving voting rights. The 14th Amendment came right after the end of the Civil War, right on the heels of Democrats immediately taking steps to block the rights of slaves. Understand that the Republican Party was the party of emancipation. The Republican Party was founded around freeing the slaves. And the Democrats, particularly in the South, wanted to keep things going even after the Civil War. They wanted to continue to subjugate and to treat people as lessers. Go back and study your history, folks. That's where we're coming from. The 14th Amendment being directly applicable to the slaves, let's think about slaves and former slaves, descendants of slaves, okay? Let's think about applying it anywhere else. We had an event everybody calls 9/11 today. 19 terrorists, many of them that overstayed their visas, making them illegally in the country. They were here, many of them, again, on visas. So they were subject to the jurisdiction of the United States only in that if they broke our laws, you know, we put them in jail. But then they became terrorists, and of course they all killed themselves in due course. But let's say that having overstayed their visa, they have a child here in the United States. Does that make them automatically an American citizen? Kind of absurd, isn't it? You have an individual passing through the United States. They're here from Panama. They're here from China. Here from Russia. Doesn't matter. They happen to be pregnant and happen to drop a baby while they're visiting the United States. Are they subject to the jurisdiction thereof? Because that's the language in the 14th. Only in that if they violate one of our laws, they may go to jail. They're subject to the jurisdiction of Panama, subject to the jurisdiction of Russia, subject to the jurisdiction of China. They're not subjects in the United States. Therefore, should it be applicable? No. Apparently, for many, many years, we've deceived people, and all they ever hear is, you're born in the United States, you're an American. No. Read the whole thing. And then the notion of equal protection under the laws. You had, hate to say this, but Democrats in states, that they wanted to make a whole slew of people second-class citizens. And that 14th Amendment, you hear and have for generations now, that this within the Constitution, this within the Bill of Rights, is applicable through the 14th. What's being stated there is, under the proviso of equal protection under the law, it is applicable to me all the way down here at the local level. That means states, you can't tread on my federal constitutional rights. They are universal for the American citizen. But step outside the citizenship, step outside of the birthright citizenship lingo, let's step into the criminal. Because once a person breaks your laws, they come into your country unlawfully under false pretenses, they're illegally here. Let's cross it into a different kind of illegal category. If someone robs a bank, runs out the door and hands the sacks of money to their child, does the child get to benefit? Does the child get to keep the money? Because that's what we're really talking about. If you commit a bad act, or if it happens to be kind of secondary, tertiary, fringe to what your primary objective is, you know, in the case of a traveler, do you get to benefit, or this child get to benefit from for the rest of his life based on, again, a fringe activity, tertiary activity, or a criminal act? If they're able to benefit from a criminal act, literally, that is a perverse incentive. Break our laws, run into our country, and we'll give you a lifetime benefit, or your child a lifetime benefit. That's perverse.
That's rewarding lawbreaking. Greg, hold your thought for just a moment. I believe we have Terry on the line. Terry, go over the question or comment, please.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, good morning.
I'm kind of confused because there was a time that if a child was born here, but the parents go back home, they may have been born in America, but I believe some people are doing it on purpose that for them to be able to stay. No, your child is may be an American, but you're not. So why do you get the benefits away from the Americans, and they can hardly get the benefits?
That's a good question. That's a good question, Terry. If you will hold a moment, I'm going to ask Greg to respond to that.
Okay.
Well, I think you're really asking about anchor babies. You know, once that child is declared an American citizen, does it give the parent a right to stay? See, this is like, you know, what you start stacking up bad acts, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. And that's been argued by the left just in the past handful of years. Oh, we're separating families. We separate families every single day. If you commit a criminal act in this country, you go to jail. We don't put your child in jail for what you did. I mean, that's biblically unsound. You can't punish the child for the offenses of the parent. But here's what makes it truly perverse, and you just hit the nail on the head. We have today taking place under this current rationale of if you're born here, you're a citizen here, birth tourism. People come here from other countries on purpose to give birth to children that are then declared American citizens. We can't continue that. It is absurd, and again, it's providing a perverse incentive, an incentive to do something bad or wrong. We can't continue this current course.
Terry, thank you so much for your call. That's a succinct answer. One of the problems is there's a vast, vast misunderstanding of the 14th Amendment. In just a moment, we're going to ask Greg to give us a little, lesson on interpreting the 14th Amendment, how it links to the 13th and the 15th Amendment, and why we should be absolutely concerned about this process continuing. I believe that this, where the judge has put it on hold for the Trump administration saying that birthright citizenship is unconstitutional, it's been put on hold by a judge, and I believe that's going to be fast-tracked to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I believe if the Supreme Court, this is my opinion, if the Supreme Court analyzes the intent, original intent, and that's the key, the original intent of the Constitution and the application thereof, I believe the U.S. Supreme Court will uphold the fact that these anchor babies are not, in fact, citizens in America. But, Terry, thank you so much for your call, and God bless you. Greg, I'm looking at an article that says why Trump is right about birthright citizenship. Tourism and illegal aliens aren't subject to the full and complete jurisdiction of the United States. Two federal judges have issued injunctions against implementing President Trump's executive order interpreting the 14th Amendment citizenship clause as denying birthright citizenship to children of illegals and non-resident aliens. Contrary to the overheated rhetoric of some commentators, this is an open question in the nation's jurisprudence. The Supreme Court may have to decide this issue. Now, here's the key I want to talk about, Greg. The High Court held in U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark, 1898, U.S.-born child of foreigners lawfully and permanently domiciled in the country was a natural-born citizen. It didn't rule on the status of children of those here temporarily or here unlawfully. These are serious arguments of both sides. Our study of the question has led to the belief that the text, history, and structure of the Constitution in its original intent demonstrate that such persons are not natural-born U.S. citizens, end quote. And then, Greg, it goes further. But the euphemism jurisdiction doesn't equate to jurisdiction required by the Citizenship Clause. Senator Jacob Howard, Republican of Michigan, who sponsored the Citizenship Clause, argued that it ought to be construed so as to imply a full and complete jurisdiction on the part of the United States. For this reason, the framers understood the clause not to cover members of the Indian tribes, which the U.S. accorded a degree of autonomy by law. The government also lacked partial authority, practical authority over the what Howard called the wild Indians who lived in the area not wildly settled to America. For similar reasons, the citizenship clause should not be construed to cover U.S.-born children of foreigners here only temporarily, because the euphemism jurisdiction of the U.S. has over them equal and full complete jurisdiction of the government as a citizen. It goes on then to talk about the 19th century international law treaties, etc. Here's the point. This article says, if we are correct that the 14th Amendment does not confer citizenship at birth to the children of visitors, lawful visitors, the same obviously is true of children whose parents are here illegally. Greg, take that information and run with it. Explain that to our listeners. I think it's a very pertinent question, because if we're going to shut down the borders, and we have, if we're going to say that these that have come in and had babies, and then they have chain migration as a result of that baby then being considered a lawful U.S. citizen, it builds a gigantic quagmire. Explain the rationale, the positive, the negative, what should be done, how should we as Christian conservatives view this?
Well, I need for you to take a step back, because we're seeing lawfare, and that's when you use the courts to, you know, wreak havoc, use the courts to go after somebody. Lawfare over the past 4 years against Donald Trump has meant that he's been sued and prosecuted and sued and indicted and sued and indicted again over and over and over. Now he's gone into the White House, and as President of the United States, you have executive authorities in a lot of different areas pursuant to the Constitution. And now we have some little, for lack of better terms, peon federal judges that think, no, I can hamstring you. I'll put this order in. I'm going to have an injunction against you so you can't do X, Y, and Z. Now folks, y'all do realize the can of worms that opens up. For 8 years, we've heard every single time you turn around, Democrats say, constitutional crisis. They're creating one, folks, because the judiciary, this notion of separate but equal, that ain't true. They have separate areas of authority. Article 1 deals with the constitutional authority of the legislature. Article 2 deals with the constitutional authority of the chief executive. We know him as the president. And Article 3 is the authority of the judiciary. Those, they have overlapping checks and balances. And what's taking place today, folks, is not a check. Literally, it is saying, hey, we're going to try to hamstring you, tie this up in court until you can get it before the U.S. Supreme Court. Executive authority is being exerted. And how has it been perverted in the past 4 years? Executive authority, I'm sorry, going back all the way to Obama. Barack Obama signed an executive order giving DACA, deferred action on childhood arrivals. That means if you're a young person that came here or were brought here, that we're not going to act on this. It's a breaking of our laws, but we're not going to act on it. You know what? Here's the reason why that order was unconstitutional. Because Article 2 requires that the President of the United States faithfully execute the laws of the United States. Y'all get what I'm saying here? He literally signed an order that was absolutely an affront to faithfully executing the laws. Joe Biden went a step farther. He said, hey, let's let them all in. By the way, for those of you as believers out there, and you go, well, we ought to welcome the stranger because that's what the Bible says. Does it say that we should tear down all the walls and then pay for everything for the stranger that wants to come and take advantage of our country? Pay for three meals a day. Pay $300 a night for the hotel room. Pay for the cell phone. Pay for the education. Pay for the medical. By the way, are any of those things paid for you? Well, a couple of y'all, maybe a few of those things. But the reality is we cannot afford to financially carry the world.
Listen, yes. Greg, hold your thought. Hold your thought for just a moment. We have Tom on the line. Tom, go over the question or comment, please.
Yes, sir. Dr. Youngblood, thank you for having Greg today. It's always a privilege. But Saturday, I was up at the Circle K, and that's I live over near the Rails for Trails, and there was two gentlemen there that they had looked like $1,000 bicycles, you know, exercise bikes. They had $300 tennis shoes on and very expensive clothes, and they were African-American, and I started talking to them. Oh, you guys are on the bike trail? I said, yeah. I said, I'd like to ask you a question. How much longer does my great-grandchildren and my grandchild and myself have to pay for slavery? I said, I thought that the Civil Rights Act of 64 and 65 made everything a level playing field. And it kind of threw them for a loop, you know, because I'm one of the most hated people. I'm an old white guy. But they said, well, the final thing would be, it would be reparations, that we're owed, meaning African Americans are owed reparations. Well, I'd like, so the, evidently that means that because their ancestors were enslaved, they didn't make money and buy property, then that went on to the next generation, and then that goods and such went on to the next, and it was constantly passed, where today they would be a lot wealthier. Well, they said they've been working for the federal government for 30 years. So that means they got one whale of a retirement, which I don't have. I live on $1,700 a month. But the question I want to ask Greg is, Greg, what about the 360,000 Union soldiers that died to free the slaves from the Democrats? What about them? Wouldn't those families, aren't they due reparations because they didn't grow huge portfolios that went to their families? They gave up their life so that the African Americans wouldn't live under the dictatorship of a democratic society. What about that? Do they have a right, Greg? Does those relatives of the 360,000 Union soldiers that died, don't they have any kinds of rights or reparations?
Greg, what say you?
No, Tom, you ask a really good question. The reality is the left wants a permanent underclass in the culture, and this divide and conquer mentality, the cultural Marxism that takes place, it's all about creating that and creating division within the culture. This has been dealt with for hundreds of years in this country. This is why you step back to Lincoln's speech on a nation divided. And you know what? He uses the words of Jesus Christ, because Jesus was accused as he cast out demons. He's accused of having done that by the power of Beelzebub. And Jesus said, a house divided against itself must fall. And that's what literally Lincoln used Jesus' words in that. And the left seems to, generation after generation, look for a way to tear the nation apart, to wrench at the fabric that holds us together. And you know, Pete Hegseth covered that a little bit the other day from a military standpoint. This notion is diversity is our strength is the most absurd notion in the world. Unity is our strength. Regardless of the things which may divide us, we must be united. And you beg an interesting question, who pays? Who pays? Who pays? I want you to know, and I've mistakenly attributed the slave trade in the United States, black African slave trade, as averse to all the other types of slavery that have gone on since the beginning of time. Black African slaves entering what became the United States, it was previously, you know, colonies that spun off from Europe, Great Britain, and such. 3.6% of black African slaves came into those colonies, which became the United States. By the way, if you want to blame somebody, I guess go back to the days of Great Britain, the Crown. 37% of those slaves, black African slaves, went into the Danish-controlled Caribbean. 45% went to Brazil. Okay, so if the United States owes a debt, which it does not, if the United States did owe a debt,
wouldn't nine times the amount be owed by those folks in Brazil, if we're being fair? But, you know, that would open another a series of questions, Pandora's box even. Tell me, what are the most horrific things ever done to the Indians, Native Americans in this country? It happened to be the Trail of Tears, right? Everybody, you just bad images come up in your mind when you even say the words Trail of Tears. But you do know that six of those Native American tribes took their black African slaves with them on that Trail of Tears. Folks, the box, the Pandora's box that gets opened up by even discussing that is a box you don't want open. Individuals that have never been enslaved saying to other individuals that never enslaved anyone, you owe me something. That is
exactly
Marxism, and it should never happen in this country. We should be united under this banner, this one nation under God. But God's been kicked to the curb. He's been kicked out of the public square. He's been kicked out of most churches, folks. Mm-hmm. At one time, that is that which united us, one nation under God.
Amen.
Yeah, Greg, 50% of the violent crimes, which include murder, are committed by only 14% of the population, the blacks. So don't they really owe me money? The ones that are astute, don't they owe me for what their brothers are doing? Because they don't say a word about it.
You know what? I wouldn't go down the rabbit hole the wrong way. I'll tell you right now, red, yellow, black, or white, divided households fill our prisons, fill our jails. The family was ripped apart. You go back to the pre-60s America, black America, white America, we were united as one America under God. We had families that looked very similar. Both blacks and whites, about 75% of households were intact. Johnson's Great Society upended all of that, and we wanted young black ladies to be married to the government. They wanted a permanent underclass in America. So they went door to door and said, hey, we'll write you a check, but there can't be a male living under this roof. And literally everything inverted. Today, here we are only 60 years later, today it's less than 25% of black American households are intact. Mom and dad at home, with son and daughter.
Our time is rapidly dissipating. Brother Tom, thank you so much for your call. Greg, take just a few seconds in our final moments and challenge our listeners with what we've said today from a biblical worldview.
My goodness, folks, there are so many moving parts, and it seems like every single day we have things to both rejoice over as well as to gasp at. Thank the Lord for that millimeter miracle, as a black pastor recently said in his prayer about Donald Trump.
Amen.
Pray for the man. Pray for the man, because the system wants to tear him apart. Pray that God would lead every step that he makes. And every single one of these appointees, pray that God would guide and direct in their lives.
Absolutely.
The scripture calls for us to pray for those leaders, and I'd ask you to do it today.
Thank you, Greg, for joining us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Look forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.8.